extremely challenging weeks on so many different levels. And for many of us, trying to balance, as we said, our own families, our children, our spouses, which are obviously our primary obligation, it is something that really takes a lot of courage and a lot of understanding to find and strike that right balance and figure out where we should be pushing, where we shouldn't be pushing, what we should be doing, what perhaps not. Something that I found that many, I shouldn't say people our age, because I see there are some in the room that may not be my age, though most of you are. Something that I found that troubles many is, where does God fit into all of this? Can we be honest for a minute? Anybody in the room share the sentiment that your emunah has been a little bit shaken over the last couple of weeks? I have no qualms being honest about that. I have had so many questions, as I'm sure many of us have had. And it brought me back to my first summer that I was ever in Camp Simcha. I'm by nature an extremely emotional person. I remember at my wedding, my wife was a division head in Camp Simcha before we got married, and many of her campers came to my wedding, and I couldn't even figure out how to interact with them. I just didn't know what to do. Like, each one had a worse condition than the next, and each one looked more, you know, more compromised than the next, and it was something that I really couldn't handle. Never in a million years did I think I would be the rabbi at Camp Simcha and be looking at this and interacting with it every day. And what was most difficult for me my first summer there for 2 weeks was, here you are with 150 campers, all under the age of 18. All of them have terrible, terrible illnesses on ongoing chemotherapy. Some of them, whatever, I don't need to go into the details, but it's horrifying. And to make things more uncomfortable for me, every day there were probably four or five campers that would come over and just share their story with me. And every time I finished talking to them, I just couldn't stop crying and then asking myself, how does God do this to children? How can this be? If you believe that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is Hatsur Tamim Pa'alo Ki Chaldu Rachav Mishpat, if you believe that the Ribono Shel Olam is fair and is equitable and makes sure to treat everyone the way they're supposed to be treated, you ask yourself, how can any of this make sense? And I felt after 2 weeks of this pile-on, I almost walked away feeling like an apikoros, like, is there something wrong with me? And I remember the next day when I came home, when I finally started to go through processing what I had heard, I called Rav Asher Weiss, and I just wanted to discuss it with him. And he told me something that really has guided so much of what Emunah has meant to me since then. So he asked me, who is the greatest believer in God in all the pages of Chumash? What would you say?
Avram?
Avram Avinu. People mistakenly say Moshe Rabbeinu. It's not correct. Avram Avinu is the one who is Hikar as Boro. He recognized the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu without any prompting. Nobody told him, nobody taught him. He came to it on his own. He had this understanding. He had a tremendous sense of insight. And it's not just that he recognized the presence of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in the world, but he then did things accordingly. He then moved ahead with that conviction and was willing to go ahead with the Asara Nisyonos. Most fundamentally, he went ahead with the Akedas Yitzchak. And that's the greatest challenge one can ever have. And yet he did it. So he's known for all eternity as the greatest believer in God, the one who was most understanding in his connection with what HaKadosh Baruch Hu meant to him. And yet, what you may not be aware of is a medrash in the beginning of this week's parsha, Parshas Chayisara. So at the end of last week's parsha, we read the crescendo, where we have the greatest of the Asara Nisyonos. We shared the hot seat for you. Please come in. So we have the greatest of Avraham Avinu's Nisyonos, which is, of course, the Akedas Yitzchak. And Avraham Avinu goes, and we have the drama of that story. And I always feel when we read it every year, I don't know if you read it this week, but you should read it every once a year at least. But when we read the story of the Akedah, maybe many of you weren't in shul this week, but your children certainly came home and spoke about it around the table. And to me, it's just as paralyzing every time you hear it. How could Avraham Avinu bring himself to do such a thing? I always put myself in his shoes and ask, would I do that? If the Ribbono Shel Olam came to me, I'm sorry that I sound like a total heretic, I'm sorry, but I'm wondering, like, would I have the strength to do that? I'm not sure. I don't know. I ask myself these kinds of questions all the time. Would I really be willing to do what Avraham Avinu did? I think it takes a tremendous amount of courage and wherewithal to be able to do anything that he did. So what happens? Avraham Avinu goes to the Akedah. Says the Medrash in this week's Parsha, after he comes home from this very traumatic experience, he walks in the door only to find that his wife Sarah Imenu has died. Says the Medrash, Hischil Avram Avinu Tameya. What does that mean? Avram Avinu began to question, and he challenges God, and he says, first you told me, Kibi Yitzchak Ikar L'Chazera. You didn't give me children for many, many years. Then you promised me I'm going to have a child, and that's going to be my future. After that, you then turn around and tell me, Ha'aleu Sham Liola. No, change of plans. We're going to now offer him as a karbon. After I put him up and somehow get over my own personal closeness and love for my son, and I focus all of my energies on you, I finally put him on the Mizbeach. After I put him on the Mizbeach, I then have a voice calling out to me, Al Tishlach Yadcha Lanar. So I take him down. I put him up, I take him down. Now after all that confusion, I come home and this is what you do. You kill my wife. Says the Medrash, Hischil Avram Avinu Tameya. Avram Avinu was confused, and he started challenging the Ribbono Shel Olam to figure out what's happening here. So Rav Asher Weiss pointed out to me, does that make Avram Avinu in your mind any less of a believer because he challenged and he had questions and he was struggling? He still goes down in history as the greatest believer and the closest person. Moshe Rabbeinu had the closest nevuah, but Avram Avinu had this tremendous tshuka, this unbelievable relationship that he developed, even though he questioned. So how can that be? The answer is because somebody who has a mature relationship, let's be honest, if you're married, not always do you see eye to eye with your spouse. Of course you love that person deeply. But there are times in your marriage, which is the closest relationship that you have, the most trusting relationship, there are times in your marriage when maybe you wonder, why would my spouse do this to me? Why would they hurt me like this? Why would they disappoint me? Why would they upset me? Why would they act in such a way, even forgetting about me? Why would they act toward another person that way? And there are highs and lows of a real deep relationship. There's a rhythm to how relationships go. Think about if you work in an office and there happens to be a secretary that works at a different part of the office and you pass her as you're walking to the coffee station to get your coffee in the morning, you don't have a relationship with that person. You're never disappointed with that person. You have nothing to do with them. All you say is hello every morning, good afternoon in the afternoon, and that's it, and you leave. That's a very surface-level relationship. There's nothing complicated about it, and there's nothing beyond the simple surface that you see. There is no depth to that relationship, which is why there is no challenge to the relationship, because there's nothing there. But people who we share a deep relationship with are the ones that sometimes are the most challenging. We have children. Sometimes our children disappoint us. What do you mean? But you love your child or do you not? Yes, sometimes you're angry at your child. Does that mean you don't love them? No. A parent's love is very deep. And even when a child disappoints their parent, we still find it within ourselves to love that child. And it's the same with HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Being a believer in God does not mean that we never have questions and we never struggle. Of course we struggle. Everybody struggles in every meaningful relationship, and even Avraham Avinu did that. So if you have found that over the last couple of weeks you may be struggling or questioning, this is your parsha. You're together with Avraham Avinu, and that's okay. He's pretty good. There's nothing wrong with being in the camp of Avraham Avinu and having that kind of relationship. Rav Shimshon Pinkus writes something interesting. He says, what does it mean to have emunah? Imagine, for a moment, somebody would tell you, I believe that the lights are on. Would that be the right way to express my statement? No, why not?
It's the light.
So what should I say?
I know
the lights are on. It's a fact. It's not, I believe. It's not an opinion. It's fact. If I say, I believe it's nighttime outside. Now, you may disagree, but you're crazy. Right? Somebody can disagree. You always have people who are going to disagree with everything, but sometimes they're crazy. You look outside and you see it's a fact. It's nighttime. There's nothing to debate. There's no discussion. Says Rav Shimshon Pinkus, imagine you have a person who lends money to another member of the community who they've been friendly with for 25 years. You grew up together, you went to school together, and now unfortunately there's a need that came up, and you go beyond your regular means and you give them a big loan that you otherwise would not have given other people, but this is your best friend. This is somebody who lives next door to you, somebody who you know so well, somebody you have a very deep relationship with. And you give them a loan of $100,000. It's not something you normally do to other people, but it's something you would do for your friend. And somebody comes over to you and says, I heard you lent them $100,000. How do you know you're going to be paid back? So what is your answer? What is your answer?
Trust them.
I don't know, but I believe them. And they then respond, so why do you trust them? Why do you believe them? The answer is because I have a 25-year relationship with this person. I've known them for so many years. I know them so well. Am I 100% that this is what's going to happen? No. But I do things for people that I have a trust in, that I have a relationship with, even though sometimes it's hard for me to do it. Writes of Shimshon Pinkus, when we talk about emuna, laha'amin means to believe. If the job of a believer was to say something that was factual, something that is provable, something that makes sense to everyone, that wouldn't be called emuna. That's called something that is a fact, like the lights are on and it's nighttime outside. When we talk about emuna, it means I'm willing to take that extra step and say to myself, I'm doing something that I cannot prove. I believe in an ideal that I cannot say with certainty is something that everybody's going to appreciate or understand, but it's something that I feel. It's something that I want to be involved with because I have a long-standing, deep relationship with this entity, with this ideal, with this idea. And because of that, I believe. Emuna means laha'amin, not to know, but rather to believe. And that is a great challenge. That's exactly why it's a challenge, because you don't know with certainty, and you cannot see it in front of you. Chafetz Chaim has an amazing mashal that I love to think about. Chafetz Chaim writes that there was a person who went away traveling on business. I didn't get to any of this yet, so everyone get warmed up. So the Chafetz Chaim writes, sorry, come around. I feel badly, really. It's okay. I'm not backing up, but I just feel badly that I have to be back to you. So the Chafetz Chaim writes about a businessman who went to a community and he ended up getting stuck there for Shabbos. So he shows up to the local shul and everyone's treating him very nicely. It's really a great experience. And after davening, the gabbai of the minyan comes over and he says, is everything okay? Is there any way I can help you? We're going to set you up for meals. He says, everything's great. I just have one question. Yeah, what's your question? He says, I noticed when it came time for Kriyas HaTorah, I saw you were running around the whole shul. You went to the front row and you gave an aliyah to someone over there. Then you ran three rows back and gave an aliyah to someone over here and you kept running around. I have a much better system where we can streamline the process. Here's my idea. Go to the front row the first week and give the first seven people the seven aliyahs this Shabbos. Then put a sticker at the seat where you finished. Next week you pick up where you left off. And this way you'll go around. It will be much easier. You don't have to keep track and running around. So the gabbai turns to him and he says, tell me, how many years have you been in the shul? He says, honestly, it's my first time ever here. I got stuck on a business trip. I'd never been here. And you think you're going to understand the system? You see, this one has yahrzeit this week. He needs an aliyah. That one is celebrating the bar mitzvah of his child. They need an aliyah. This one is celebrating the marriage of their daughter and the Sheva Brachas this week. So, the Chassan needs an aliyah. The parents need an aliyah. I can't explain to you the system. Stick around for 2 or 3 years. You'll begin to understand why we do things the way we do. You come here one Shabbos, you're not going to understand it. And the Chafetz Chaim said, we sometimes look around the world and we ask all kinds of questions. Doesn't it make more sense, says the Chafetz Chaim, how often have you seen how tragic it is? You have a family that is living a blissful, beautiful, amazing life. And HaKadosh Baruch Hu has to step in out of nowhere and destroy everything. Why? Why? The people who have no money already figured out how to live without money, so keep them poor. The people who have a comfortable lifestyle have figured out how to live their lives comfortably like that. Why do you have to flip everything on its head? The families that have a sick child already know how to deal with a sick child. Why don't you keep the illnesses there? I always feel, I said it last night at your house, it was beautiful last night, and you're an amazing speaker. I don't know if you plan to ever go into it. Really, I was going to text your husband today. I just didn't know that it would come out the right way. So I was going to call you. But you really speak amazingly well, extremely poised, and straight to the point, which I don't know how to do. So I always feel people give so much money to Camp Simcha, and they call me all the time, we want to give a donation. I always ask, why are you giving money? Do you have any idea what they do? Not that I'm discouraging, but I'm just curious. Why are you so excited? I honestly feel many people give money to Camp Simcha and these kinds of organizations because they think, oh, if I give money to this, it's not going to come to my family. No one agrees with me? Tova? You know what I'm saying. Exactly. Right? Let me give money this way, like, God, I took care of that problem, and it's just not going to come my way. The world doesn't work that way. So the Chafetz Chaim said, we sometimes ask ourselves, why do you have to take the wealthy family and make them poor? And why do you have to take the healthy family and make them sick? Why do you turn everything on its head? And the Ribbono Shel Olam turns back to us and he says, tell me, how long have you been around this world? Oh, 30 years? 40 years? 50 years? Nobody in the room is over 50, so I would imagine that we can't say more than that. And the Ribbono Shel Olam says, you know what? This is a complicated system. Stick around for another few thousand years. Maybe you'll begin to understand the rhythm of how we do things the way we do and why life turns out the way it does. And this is so much of the challenge that we have as Ma'aminim Ba'Kadosh Baruch Hu. I've always noticed that in davening in the Shemona Esrei, we ask for a geula. Many different times, we ask in Re'eva Anyenu. We ask Hashiva Shavteinu Kavarishonu. We ask Tekabe Shofar Gadol L'Cheiruseinu. And finally, we ask V'sechazena Einenu B'Shivcha L'Tziyam Merachamim. What is this focus on our eyes, V'sechazena Einenu, that we want our eyes to see? What if I don't see the geula? What if, like, I miss it? And then I take the next flight. So what is V'sechazena Einenu all about? I have a feeling, I don't know if it's correct, but what I think about in Shmona Esrei is, V'sechazena Einenu doesn't mean our eyes, it means our perspective. Our perspective should finally someday match up with your perspective. When we think about HaKadosh Baruch Hu, it says, Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem Tzion. When we come back, when we'll have a geula, our eyes will meet up with the Ribbono Shel Olam's eyes. What does it mean? I think what it means is our perspective will finally be understood. We'll round out the picture of all these questions we've had. Finally, when we engage with the Ribbono Shel Olam himself, we'll see with our own eyes the full picture and the full perspective. That's what it means, V'sechazena Einenu. That's what we daven for, because that's what we struggle with. That's what's really hard for us, that we don't have that understanding and we don't have that perspective. And that's what makes it extremely troubling. So the Chiddushei Harim writes, in this week's Parsha, Avraham Avinu goes to the Akedah, and we're told in the Pasuk, Vayar es hamakom merachok. Avraham Avinu sees the destination from a distance. Now the simple understanding means he's traveling for a couple of days, and finally he sees we're almost there. From a distance, he notices that we're finally almost there. So, excuse me, explains the Chiddushei Harim, maybe that's not what it means. Vayaras hamakom erachok means something more than that. There are times in our life experience that we refer to HaKadosh Baruch Hu as makom. If you've ever been to a shiva, we say hamakom yinachem eschem. So God is sometimes referred to as the makom. Says the Chiddushei Harim, at this most challenging moment of Avraham Avinu's life, vayaras hamakom erachok, he felt that God was very far away from him. He couldn't understand. How could the Ribbono Shel Olam ruin my life? What is he doing to me? And at that moment, he did not feel the closeness. And he did not feel the love. And he did not feel HaKadosh Baruch Hu's embrace. And he didn't feel that Somech Hashem L'chol HaNoflim. Or, Tov Hashem L'chol V'racham Aval Kol Ma'asav. Now, this is Rachmanus, that you tell me to kill my child? at this juncture of his life, he felt the Ribbono Shel Olam is very far away. And he couldn't connect with it. And he had trouble. And he was struggling. And that to me is very comforting. That if Avraham Avinu can have that feeling, then we're also allowed to have that feeling. We can also sometimes feel demoralized, dejected, confused, hard to understand, have all kinds of questions. Somebody wrote to me on Friday, I'm not going to read her text because who knows, maybe she'll listen to this. But she wrote to me on Friday, I'm not just confused, I'm really angry at God. Is that okay? Am I allowed to be angry at him? Look, sometimes you're angry at people you really love. Right? Dr. Pelkowitz once told me, an abnormal reaction to an abnormal situation is totally normal. We can't expect that when we're going through such an out-of-body experience, such an abnormal situation, that we're going to react normally. Of course, this is not my normal self. But you've seen when there's a pressure in a family, when someone's having a very difficult time, you've seen that sometimes they act differently than they otherwise would. We don't even understand the extent of how horrific this is. I'm going to Israel next week. Magen David Adom told me, if you don't go to see the town of Be'eri, you will not understand the depth of how horrible this is. I don't want to go there. I really don't. Number one, because it's dangerous. It's a closed military zone. Number two, because I think I'm going to faint looking at this. They said to me, it's like going into a concentration camp. It's like being in Auschwitz. But they said, if you don't see it, you don't understand what we're living with. You don't get it. So just this week, Rav Asher Weiss called me on Wednesday. He said he had a die-in. I'm not sure I should even share the story. But maybe I should, just so that we understand a little bit more of what's happening. So a die-in from the Eidah Haredes came to talk to him this week on Tuesday night. And he was in a panic, and he said he had an urgent question. What was his question? There's a member of his community that has a first cousin who is unaffiliated. 17-year-old girl was at this music festival on October 7th. Unfortunately, she was shot in the back, and she was raped, and all kinds of terrible things. And they assumed she was dead, so they left her there. And hours later, a paramedic came around and saw that she was breathing. And he put her on a stretcher, evacuated her right away, and saved her life. A month later, she's rehabilitating. She's doing really well, considering what she had been through. She's still in the hospital, but doing very well. And this week, they just found out that she's 4 weeks pregnant from this evil monster. And the question that was asked is, can an abortion be done? So when you thought you heard it all, and when you thought it can't get worse than everything we heard, we don't even know the surface of how deep the trauma is from this horrific couple of weeks. And it's really, really painful. And it's really, really hard for us. And it's reason to be confused. But it's a total, I'm sorry, it's a totally abnormal situation, which is making many of us act or react in abnormal ways, which is totally normal. Because what should be expected of us? And by the way, we're nothing. We don't live in Israel. To be honest, right now, I'm not sure, it's not really true, who's in more danger, but we're doing pretty poorly here. Thanks, Tova. That's right. You can say it. Yeah. It's complicated. It's really, really hard. It's confusing. But that's the job of Imam in Ba'akadosh Baruch Hu. And I think all this is doing is stripping away from us the belief that anybody cares about us other than HaKadosh Baruch Hu. It's just pushing us more to where we need to be, which is, Ein lanu al mi lehishayin ela al avinu shebashamayim. That's the bottom line. You can have a $1 billion fence, the greatest security apparatus in the world, the greatest intelligence community anywhere in the world. I was in a community on the border of Gaza right before this happened in the summertime. The JNF had asked me to visit one of their projects. I went with my wife and children. We were a little scared to be there because they told us they have 8 seconds to get to a shelter once the siren goes off. And I was like, maybe you're used to this, but I'm not. They're like, no, we never have anything. Nothing ever happens here. It's okay. Once in a while, it's okay. You see, there are safe homes all over the place. Don't worry, it's okay. So we went. And they were showing us. They have these drones that can see 3 miles into the enemy territory. And you can zoom in. They were giving us the joystick. Like, zoom in and see what's happening. And you ask yourself, with these drones and with the security fence and with everything they have, how in the world did nobody notice that a few thousand terrorists were less than 1 mile away from the border training for who knows how long? Stockpiling. Doing everything. Nobody saw anything. What's the answer? What's the answer? So, you can say, there's going to be an investigation. This one needs to be held accountable. That's the job of the people who are going to lead the investigation. It's not our job. There is no way to understand this other than to say that HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted this. As awful of a conclusion as that is, how could HaKadosh Baruch Hu want people to be killed? How could he want women to be raped? How could he want children to be taken hostage? It's shocking. But it's the only conclusion I can come to. Now, once you come to that conclusion, then it's very hard, because we say in Ashrei every day, Tov Hashem lakol v'racham aval kol masav, so something doesn't fit. So you're confused. And you have questions, just like Avraham Avinu, and just like every Jewish community has had for the last few thousand years. Something that I heard, you know, we have these nightly Tehillims in all of our shuls, and it's really, really beautiful, but I forgot who it was. One of the speakers said one night that he feels as if our generation has finally been admitted into Jewish history. Like, for those of us who are 40, we lived an amazing life, but it's not the story of the Jewish people at all. We did not connect with every single generation before us that understood what it meant to be a Jew and to sacrifice for being a Jew. But now we begin to understand it, and welcome to Jewish history. And it's upsetting to think that way, but it's inspiring to think that way. We're living through something which is a real part of Jewish history. And the question is, how do we react and how do we respond? And what do we do with our confusion about the Ribono Shel Olam? Now you may ask yourself, is there any way out of this? Is there any way out of this? You have Iran and Hezbollah and Lebanon and Hamas and all these kings in Saudi Arabia and who knows where. And the UN? The UN. Do you see what's going on in the UN? The Human Rights Council this past week was led by Iran. Do you see how upside down our world is? Do you understand that a part of the Security Council is Russia, that has been involved in genocide for the last 2 years? This world is crazy. This world is insane. I was asked to do an interview this week on TV, which I never in my life thought I would do. Somebody in our shul has a relationship with, I have no idea what. And the next thing I know, I get an email, and they say, we actually send our story to 200 TV stations. So it's like an AP for TV. So they do like short stories on things, and they send it out. So they said, we want to talk about the hostage crisis. I said, listen, I'm not the right person. I don't really know anything that's going on. I don't have any firsthand information. I'm a basic, simple Jew like everybody else, but if you have no other Jewish person talking on this segment, I'm happy to be the one. You need somebody on there. So I said, why don't you interview family of hostages? So I put them in touch. But they said, no, we want to talk to you also. We start getting in a conversation. And the woman says, listen, there's very sweet. She says, listen, there's a controversy. There's the Palestinian narrative and the Israelis. I said, do you mind if I stop you right there? What is controversial about a six-month-old baby being held hostage? What's controversial? Yes, what brought us to this point might be a controversy. But what happened now, there is nothing controversial about it. It's black and white. And yet, the world somehow doesn't see it the way we do. And half of the world is convinced that six-month-old babies, it is justifiable to take them away. And 90-year-old Holocaust survivors, yeah. Yeah, makes sense. Because you pushed us to our limits. So we're living in an olam hafuch. And you ask yourself, we daven for a geula. What kind of geula? What are you talking about? Even God can't figure this out. How is any of this going to get resolved? So I believe it's the Chafetz Chaim. I didn't have a chance to look it up. But the Chafetz Chaim, I think, writes in a sefer on Chumash. In a few weeks, we're going to learn the story about Yosef and his brothers. And it's such a dramatic story, and it's so painful to read how much they caused destruction. It wasn't something that was an external force. It was their own destruction that they created. So we're told that Yosef ends up becoming the viceroy of Mitzrayim. And all the brothers are confused. They come down, and suddenly the king of Mitzrayim knows everything about them. And he starts asking them very pointed questions. And then he sends them back, and then he tells them to come again. And then they go away, and they see that there are goblets inside of their bags, and everyone's turning to each other like, I promise I didn't steal this. This wasn't me. What happened? So much confusion. So much confusion. Vayigash elav Yehuda. Binyamin is taken away. Really? We lost Yosef already. Now we're going to lose Binyamin? The whole story of Rachel Imenu is gone? And Yehuda stands up and he says, no. Anochi Erevenu. I'm going to stand up because I took responsibility. I told my father Binyamin would get back alive. The whole family is in total disarray, total confusion. How does it work itself out? How does everything work itself out? What happened? Two words. Yosef calls them into a room, and all he says is two words. Ani Yosef. And all of a sudden, the brothers look at each other and say, wow, now everything makes sense. We had all these questions. Not in a million years did we think, how can this be Yosef? It's impossible. Nobody even thought about that possibility in a million years. But all he needed to say was, Ani Yosef. And suddenly, everyone's confusion was resolved. Everything became entirely clear. Says the Chafetz Chaim, we look at an upside down world and it's an olam hafuch. And the whole world is turning on its head. I shouldn't say this, but I think all of us believe it's true. Guarantee you, if 100 LGBTQ students were locked into a library in a university anywhere in this country, there would be protests and riots in every single state. But because we're Jews, nobody cares. Just call it for what it is. Nobody cares. That's where we're holding. That's where we're up to. And if somebody would murder 1,400 animals, you would have PETA going out and turning the world upside down. But because they murdered 1,400 Jews in Israel, nah. The BBC is not sure whether or not it actually happened. We have to investigate. We're not sure. There's different accounts that we're hearing. And it's important for a journalist to always look into both sides and make sure that it's accurate. So the BBC, as of now, is still not sure 4 weeks later when we have videos of everything that happened. Still not sure. We have to listen to both sides and make sure we get a clear understanding. When this is the world you're living in, you ask yourself, could even HaKadosh Baruch Hu figure out how to fix this world? And the answer is, all that needs to happen is HaKadosh Baruch Hu coming to us and saying, Ani Hashem. Just like Yosef stood up to his brothers and said, Ani Yosef. And suddenly, all of the years of confusion became clarified in 1 second. That's what it's going to be in Achris HaYamin. HaKadosh Baruch Hu just has to stand up and say, Ani Hashem. And by declaring Ani Hashem, everything is going to become clear in one moment. And that's what we look forward to. To that understanding of V'sechazena inenu, B'shuvcha letzion berachamim. not just our return to Eretz Yisrael, not just Vili Yerushalayim Ircha, not just to Kabbash Shofar Gadol L'Cheruseinu. It's more than that. It's having an understanding that someday we will come to that time and to that experience of B'Sechazena Einenu B'Shuvcha L'Tzion Berachamim. That not only will we come back to Eretz Yisrael, but our perspective will reach the perspective of the Ribbono Shel Olam himself. And this is what we daven for. Ki ayin ba'ayin yiru b'shuv Hashem Tzion. The Maharal points out, I know I pretended like I was finishing five times already, but I'll really finish. The Maharal points out, and I'll have to get to this next time we get together. So the Maharal points out, you notice in the Purim story, everything is Maharu es Haman. This, quick, you see that verb being used over and over again. By Yitzias Mitzrayim, what does it say? B'chipazon. The Jewish people, how long were they in Mitzrayim? 200 years. Right? So 200 years, you're enslaved, you're oppressed, life is terrible, your children are being thrown into the river, you're being slaughtered, everything. What's the rush? God, take it easy. I'm willing to wait another day. They have to rush out, they couldn't even bake the bread. What are we going to eat? Why can't you just give me an extra hour? What are we rushing for? Says the Maharal, the reason why. Did you build this house? Right? So
no.
You did construction on this house?
Did construction.
Okay. Everybody knows that when you do construction, it takes a very long time. And as long as they project it's going to take, it takes a lot longer than that. Because it takes time for human beings to figure out how to do things, to properly plan them, to set everything up, to build it. It's not so easy. You can't just snap your fingers and it's there. It takes time for us to do things. With the Ribbono Shel Olam, it doesn't take time. What HaKadosh Baruch Hu wanted to prove to the Jewish people at the time of Yetzias Mitzrayim and at the time of Mordechai and Esther was that it doesn't take time for things to change. Look what happened. The whole world believed that Israel was the superpower of the Middle East, and in 1 second, they lost their respect for us. Everything changed. And that means everything can change back the same way it changed this way. The Ribbono Shel Olam doesn't need time to work things out. Which is what the Navi in Sefer Malachi writes, Pis'om yavo ha'adon al-heichalo, which means HaKadosh Baruch Hu will come very suddenly into the world. And I feel almost as if that's what's happening. The Ribbono Shel Olam revealed himself to us so suddenly, and we just need to see it. I was watching a clip today. Rabbi Axelrod is in Eretz Yisrael now with Rabbi Trump. And they sent a clip. They went to an army base. I think it must have been straight from the airport. I don't know if they were ready at an army base tonight. And they have the two of them on the shoulders of Chayalim, dancing around. I mean, the Chayalim are dancing and singing. And what struck me was, what are they singing? I couldn't believe it. V'nahafachu. It amazed me. So we read the Purim story and we sing these songs. We don't believe that they're actually going to happen. But these soldiers who are out in the front lines fighting believe V'nahafachu is a real possibility. And that's what I think we need to spend our energy thinking about. To spend our energy following every video, every clip, every news item that comes out is very, very painful. It's probably not healthy for us. Probably doesn't make us better mothers or better fathers. It probably doesn't help us to raise our children properly, and our children need us. One of my sons, Rabbeim, called me 2 days after school started again, after Sukkot. And he said, I just want you to check on your child. He's been stuttering. And I was like, stuttering? Like, what? Never heard that. And he came home that night, and he was stuttering. And I said, is everything okay? He's like, yeah, everything's fine. And I realized, he's terrified. He hears what's going on, and we're not addressing it. So he's just holding it in. His parents are not being responsible enough. I'm not calling out my wife. She's great. I wasn't responsible enough. My house was mayhem because people were calling from everywhere. We need vests. We need this. We need money for a gun. We need. My kids are sitting there listening to this, and I'm thinking, like, what did they hear? They heard that, like, every person in Israel doesn't have a gun. Nobody has a vest to protect themselves. Like, everyone's going to die. So I thought about it. I'm like, where is my parenting skills that I didn't think to talk to my children about what they may have heard and what's going on, he's scared. Baruch Hashem, we're fine. And I think people have come to a more comfortable understanding of what they should share and what they shouldn't share and how careful they should be. But spending our time just following the news is probably not doing us any good. So we should follow a little bit, make sure we're up with what's going on. But, you know, every video that's posted on Instagram and every initiative that somebody starts, and somebody just sent me tonight, they're upset. We have Tehillim every night, but why aren't the women coming? I said, did you see the women's section every night of Tehillim? No, it's not enough. We need to have a Tehillim gathering from 10 to 12 every night. Like, I don't know about you. Like, I'm collapsing at the end of the day. Like, everybody's doing what they can. I believe that. I really feel that way. And as young mothers, you can't go out at 10 o'clock at night. You need to take care of yourselves and to take care of your children. What I do think we can focus our attention on is this point: to strengthen our belief that Geula is a real possibility. Maybe it's something we never really believed, and it's something we never thought about enough, but to really try to reemphasize that possibility, that Geula, that understanding of what our relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is all about, is a real possibility. That V'nahafochu is what the Chayalim are singing, because they believe it. They know that the Ribono Shel Olam is on our side. Again, I was supposed to finish, but let me share another story. Rav Asher Weiss told me 2 weeks ago, he got a call from a Rav Tzva'i, from a rabbi in the army. And he told him that there was the army sometimes gives one day respite. They give people an opportunity to go home to see their families. So they had told this married man he was able to go home. So the man asked the Rav Tzva'i, he said his wife did not yet go to the mikveh. If he goes home, there's no way in the world that he's not going to give a hug and a kiss to his wife. But he knows he's not allowed to. So is he allowed to leave the base to go home for a day to see his wife and his children when he knows he's going to violate an avera? You know, when you think about a question like that, and you imagine these are the chayalim that are fighting for us, is there any doubt in your mind? Ki Hashem Elokecha haholech imachem lilachem lachem lehoshia eschem. Is it possible that the Ribono Shel Olam is not going to fight with them? Is it possible that HaKadosh Baruch Hu is not going to be on their side when this is what they're thinking about? When a chayal asked the Shaila last week, he was worried they're about to go on an invasion in Gaza. He doesn't know how long they're going to be. The halacha is when you do Shnayim Mikra V'Achad Targum every week, it has to be finished by the time you read that parsha. You can't start it before Parshas Chayisara begins, and you can't finish it after Chayisara ends. So he wanted to know, next week he's probably going to be very busy with the ground invasion. Can he start Chayisara before he leaves on Shabbos? Because he's concerned he won't be able to do Shnayim Mikra. I listened to the Shaila and I asked myself, does every single person in this room go over the parsha every week? Does every single one of your husbands do the parsha every week? Like, hold them accountable to that. Hold them accountable. What does that mean? You have a chayal who's worried that he's about to go into Gaza and this is what's concerning him. What am I going to do about my Shnayim Mikra? This is what he's asking questions about. Where are we? So I don't think we need to have a Tehillim from 10 to 3 in the morning. And I don't think we need to run ourselves thin. But I do think, be inspired by what's going on the other side. Be inspired by the courage and the bravery and the belief and the understanding of what a true Jewish soldier is all about. Become a soldier on your own. Fight on your own. Think about how the soldiers are extending themselves, what they're worrying about. Think about this man. Have you ever violated harchakos at a time when you're not allowed to be with your husband? This guy is prepared not to see his wife. He may never see her again because he's worried that maybe he's going to violate one of the harchakos. Are we as careful as he is when we're not under duress? It's a real question to ask ourselves. Not to feel bad about, but to ask ourselves, to challenge ourselves. Are we as careful as those people who understand that Geula is a real possibility, who look forward to that appreciation of what a relationship with HaKadosh Baruch Hu is. And we hope, as the Navi says, Ki beitseischa mi Mitzrayim arenu niflos, that the same way HaKadosh Baruch Hu took us out of Mitzrayim, and he did it not just by taking us out, but he showed the most wondrous and overwhelming miracles. Says the Navi, that is the way that the end of days will play out as well. That's what we daven for, and that's what we all hope for. And we're all doing our best, and I hope that we should continue to come together to give each other chizuk, as the Navi says, Ish esre'ehu ya'azoru ve'alachiv yamar chazak. The greatest way to feel chizuk is to be mechazik each other. It's very hard when we feel that we're going through something alone. It's hard when somebody has a loss in their own family and nobody else really shares the pain together with you. But when you have so many people all over the world who feel the pain together, it almost makes you understand that it's chatzi nechama. It's a little bit of a nechama to know that all the Jewish people are in this together. And I've said, we say it so often when we go to a shiva. Hamakam yinachem eschem besoch shar avi leitzion. You ever realized? What does it mean, besoch shar avi leitzion v'Yerushalayim? The whole world is being misabel now on Tzion v'Yerushalayim, all of us. This is not talking about 2,000 years ago. This is talking now. We're being misabel about the destruction of Tzion v'Yerushalayim, and yet, as we do that together, and as we try to make sense of everything that's going on together, it certainly gives us chizuk. So I thank you for opening your home.
Thank you.
I thank Zahava for putting this together as always. And I hope that everybody